and welcome to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. I'm Michaela Kennan, joined here in the KRCB studios with my co-host Gary Carnevale. I've got engineer Greg Moralia here tonight doing our boards, and we've got an exciting show in store for you on this Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, by the way, to all of our dads out there. First up, we are going to chat with North Bay filmmaker Cassie Jay. She's just produced a wonderful documentary entitled The Right to Love, An American Family, screened yesterday at the Frameline 36 San Francisco International LGBT Film Festival. Later on, it's a chat with Linda Thunderhorse. She will tell us all about a fundraiser that she's helping to organize coming up at the end of this month that will benefit the Sonoma County AIDS Emergency Funds. Right now, we're going to go to Greg with the Outbeat News and Calendar.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, June 17th, 2012. Frameline, the world's largest LGBT media arts nonprofit, is now hosting Frameline 36 International LGBT Film Festival, which opened Thursday and will run through June 24th, with screenings at the historic Castro Theater, the Roxy Theater, and the Victoria Theater, all in San Francisco. The festival is the world's oldest and largest LGBT film festival. For the second year, the Rialto Cinemas, Elmwood, and Berkeley will also screen Frameline films. Santa Rosa resident and former Rialto Cinemas operator Kai Boyd operates this theater. The tagline for Frameline 36, Find Your Story, is a direct action statement inviting audiences to find themselves somewhere in the 104 short film programs and 217 feature-length films in this festival. During the 11 days of Frameline 36, tens of thousands of people from across the globe will come together to see the best LGBT cinema, with more than 30 countries represented, including Chile, Indonesia, Iran, South Africa, and Turkey. The festival opened with Vito by Jeffrey Schwartz, an empowering documentary about the inexhaustible gay activist and film author Vito Rosso, that chronicles not only the creation of his groundbreaking book, The Celluloid Closet, but also his work as the founding member of GLAAD and ACT UP. The documentary will air on HBO later this month. Vito is one of the many documentaries that will celebrate the lives and work of courageous LGBT folks with great importance to our community's worldwide movement towards full equality. As the world-renowned stage for the newest and most exciting voices in independent cinema, Frameline 36 is screening 29 films that examine queer life in films created by and for and about activists. Frameline 36 closes with the delightful feature film Cloudburst that stars Oscar winners Olympia Dukakis and Brenda Fricker as a lesbian couple who does everything in their power to stay together after one of the women was committed to a senior facility. The film celebrates its world premiere the night of San Francisco Pride's parade and festival Sunday, June 24th, and is followed by a huge party. Tickets are still available for many of the films and programs. For more information, go to www.frameline.org. And speaking of San Francisco Pride, the celebration and parade will take place next Saturday and Sunday, June 23rd and 24th. There'll be over 200 parade contingents, 300 exhibitors, and more than 20 stages and venues. The San Francisco Pride celebration and parade is the largest LGBT gathering in the nation. This year's theme is Global Equality. The festival takes place at the Civic Center on Saturday and Sunday from noon until 6 p.m. The parade will take place on Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. down Market Street from Spear to the Civic Center. And definitely the best way to get to the city for Pride is either via BART, just get off at the Civic Center station for the festival, or Embarcadero, or Montgomery, or Civic Center for the parade. From the North Bay, take the Larkspur Ferry. A special Pride ferry will leave the Larkspur Ferry Terminal at 8:45 a.m. and will get you to San Francisco in plenty of time for the start of the parade. For more information, go to goldengate.org. And to get all of the details about the San Francisco Pride celebration, go to their website at sfpride.org. And then after you get home from the parade and festival, tune in to Outbeat Now for a special Pride show featuring a look at today's LGBT civil rights movement, including segments from the new Christopher Hines documentary, Legalize Gay. That's at 8 p.m. next Sunday night, right here on KRCB Radio. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Tuesday, June 19th at 1:30 p.m., the Santa Rosa Senior Group will meet at the Glacier Center. Also on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Group will meet at the Positive Images Center. 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. On Thursday, June 21st at noon, the Women's Brown Bag Lunch happens at 30 North San Pedro Road in San Rafael. And also on Thursday at 6:30 p.m., the Men's Peer-to-Peer HIV Group will meet at Face-to-Face, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. And at 7:30 p.m. that same night, the Positive Images Youth Group will meet at Santa Rosa High School. Finally, on Friday, June 22nd at 10 a.m., Spectrum LGBT Center hosts What is Family?, an afternoon of discussion of senior issues, including guest speakers and a screening of the documentary Gen Silent. It happens at the Nonprofit Resource Center, 555 Northgate Drive in San Rafael. If you have news or an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevelli, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Collage.
Thanks, Greg. Cassie J makes films with her sister and mother through their production company, Jaybird. The second documentary, The Right to Love, an American Family, chronicles the story of a Santa Rosa family headed by a legally married gay couple who decides to take actions as the fight for equal marriage rights for same-sex couples rages on in California. Cassie, it's a pleasure to have you into the studio. Welcome to Outbeat Collage.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you, Cassie. Great to meet you, finally. Let me first tell you, the film succeeds on every level as an engaging documentary, as a portrait of a very special family, and as a call to action. Talk about the LeFou family and about why what they were doing inspired you to build a film around them.
Well, what the LeFous were doing were actually just posting their home videos on YouTube. They had a YouTube channel called Gay Family Values. Actually, it's still on YouTube, so you can search for it there. But Gay Family Values, and in 2008, they started posting their home videos on this YouTube channel to show how normal and loving a family with two gay dads can be. And it was right around the time that Prop 8 was going on and passed in 2008. And it was actually my sister, Christina Clack, that originally found their YouTube videos. In, I think it was February 2009 that she discovered them, and they only had three or four videos on YouTube at that point. And she instantly fell in love with them and sent me the videos, and then I fell in love with them. And that was really the start of the whole film. And now they have something like 300 YouTube videos on now. So they're really online activists. And then we made this film to show their online activism and also kind of the backstory around their family and also what's going on in the political climate today with LGBT rights.
So talk about approaching them. You called them up or you emailed them and just said...
Gosh, it was 3 years ago. So, well, more than 3 years ago. But yeah, I think my sister emailed them and they got back right away. Jay Foxworthy, who's, so Brian LeFou and Jay Foxworthy, they're a legally married gay couple. So Jay Foxworthy emailed Christina back right away and said, we'd love to have you in our home and you can interview us and whatever you want. And at that point, we only planned on The Right to Love being a bunch of vignettes of stories. So we were also following this activist group called One Struggle, One Fight at that time in San Francisco. And we followed a couple other stories and a lesbian couple. And we ended up just kept on coming back to the LeFous and decided to make it really just about them.
Give us a little more sense of that whole experience. You know, you started with the YouTube movies, but then your film goes much more in depth in dealing with the dad's struggles in coming out, the whole courtship and wedding process, the adoption of Selena and Daniel. Give us some insights as to how you were able to kind of move in and capture all those fine details.
Well, you know, I think the reason why we do kind of cover a broad aspect of their entire lives, from their wedding to their adoption to Jay Foxworthy's suicide attempt later on in the film, and we talk about bullying, and so we cover a lot of topics that are very, you know, prevalent in the LGBT community. And I think the reason why we had to do that was because my family, we made this film, and none of us are gay or lesbian, and we don't have any close family or friends before we made this film that we knew that we're out of the closet. And so when we started making The Right to Love, it was really a learning experience for us. And so as we were discovering, you know, all the political arguments and people who were against gay marriage and what they were saying and their talking points, we wanted to include that in the film because that was shocking to us. And then also kind of the rebuttal with the LaFuse talking about, well, you know, if you're afraid of gay people adopting, here's our story. And then they tell their story. And we were just so moved by those chapters in their adoption and their wedding and bullying and all that, that we had to include that in the film because that really changed our perspective as well.
Sure. So coming from that perspective of not knowing, we're really getting your experience and your curiosities and your questions answered as part of the entire film.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's for better or worse, but we, you know, we didn't know a lot about this topic before we started the film. So we hope this film will speak to other people like us before we started making The Right to Love who don't know anything about the issues and maybe even disagree with gay marriage, because my family, we were all raised very evangelical Christian. So we, not only did we not know anything about LGBT issues, we were raised to believe that it was wrong. Yeah. So we hope this film will speak to those who are on the fence or against gay marriage and open their minds up a bit and open their hearts, really, just by seeing the love between the LaFues.
That's a powerful testimony.
Thank you.
And you do a great job covering the Prop 8 controversy from really before Prop 8 with those first important weddings in San Francisco. And you take us through the passage of the proposition that effectively put an end to gay marriage here in California. Talk about sifting through so much material, your selection process, and how the inclusion of both sides of the argument is important to your film.
Oh, both sides are so important. Actually, one of the... So I edited The Right to Love, and in the editing room, that's really where you write the story for a documentary, is in the editing room. And there was this point when I was editing the film, we had all this footage of the LaFue family and their story, and it just, I mean, so many tears were shed during that time. And I realized we didn't have an antagonist. We didn't have an antagonist. We had the LaFues sharing their heartwarming stories, but we didn't have the person combating it and showing what the LaFue's struggle is, because really they just stay in their home in Santa Rosa. They don't put themselves on, you know, the front line, the firing line, to be accused or ridiculed. So we needed that antagonist. And so that's when I really started collecting the news footage and seeing how much misinformation is spewed in the news. And especially if you watch Fox News and, you know, you start listening to Michael Savage on the radio. And it's just really shocking to see how much hatred is being, you know, put across the world. So we started collecting that and just kind of archiving it and ended up using some of that footage in the film to show what the battle is that the LaFues are up against. So in a way, the antagonist is the media and the misinformation.
Misinformation from mainstream media.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Money's always an issue when things like this are happening. How were you able to raise funds to produce this and support the whole storyline?
Well, gosh, we really made The Right to Love with nothing. I mean, it was really pinching pennies. And my first film about sex education, Daddy, I Do, that film was actually a bigger budget than The Right to Love, my second film, but only because we bought our camera for the first film. So the second film, we already had a camera. But it was really difficult. And, I mean, we didn't want to halt production just because we didn't have the funds to have beautiful lighting and perfect sound and all that. So we kept rolling because this is a very time sensitive issue and topic that needs to get out, especially this year. And that's why I'm so happy that it's getting out in 2012, right before the big presidential election in November. Mm-hmm. But, we didn't want to halt production. So we just kept going and, you know, maybe you can see it in some ways. It's not like a pristine PBS documentary, but it works and the story's there. And we did end up having an angel investor who came on halfway through the production saying, I believe in this cause and I want to help you. So that was amazing. Ford Austin, if you're listening. And our producer, who, God, went through a fatal or nearly fatal car accident and is still in the hospital a year later. But he's been our trooper, so...
Give us just a little, kind of a ballpark figure. We're not talking $500 here, but we're not talking $5 million either. So,
Well, gosh, if I said the number, people would gasp at how it's really nothing. I mean, you could probably sell your car and make this movie with it. So, as long as you don't have a luxury car.
That's wonderful for people to know, filmmakers out there to know that, you know, you don't even need to buy a camera. You can just rent one and tell your story, which is what Frameline's tagline is. This year, find your story. And this is a beautiful story that you told.
Thank you. You
did a great job with whatever budget you had to work with.
Thank you.
Tell us about making the film. Tell us about, you said the film really came together while you were editing. Were you truly inspired by the LeFou family? Did they help you along? Did they, you know, were they making suggestions or were you really sort of driving the story?
That's a great question because the LeFous really are kind of the poster family for our film. However, maybe opposing to popular idea, they aren't involved with production at all. So they're not producers, and they weren't in the editing room. They actually didn't see the film for a long, long time after it was completed until we finally had a cast crew screening at Skywalker Ranch. So they were very anxious to watch it because they had no involvement in production whatsoever. And I wanted it that way because I didn't want people to think that they made this film about themselves because it's not that way at all. So it was really just my family being inspired by them and we wanted to tell their story. And we also wanted to, you know, show all sides of their story, not just sugarcoat it. So, you know, there's a lot of tough topics that we talk about in the film too and personal subjects. I mean, we interview Brian's family in the film, which is very controversial in some of the comments that are made from Brian's family. And, you know, that was hard for him to watch and his family too to watch.
Sorry to interrupt. Some incredible moments there. And that epitomizes what happened with Prop 8 because you get the sense that the grandmother voted the wrong way.
Yeah.
And you have the brother who didn't even tell his brother he was voting for Prop 8, effectively against marriage rights for same-sex couples.
There were a lot of
those are some
dynamics.
Really powerful moments. And, of course, Dad.
Yeah, you'll have to see the film to understand the,
right.
And, the drama around that.
And that was you. We can hear you answering or asking a few questions there, prying the information out of them in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to be a little tough to get to the bottom of the story and just really try to realize what's going on. And the family definitely wasn't completely understanding of how they voted.
Right.
But. Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit more about that whole process. What inspires you? Do you feel like you're going in one direction and then all of a sudden decide midway, I'm going to change directions? And then how do you know when it's done?
Oh, gosh. You know, I actually just had this conversation with a filmmaker friend of mine. I am beginning to think that a truly talented filmmaker is one who can complete projects. Because that's the hardest thing to do is just complete it and put it out into the world. There's a lot of filmmakers who start things and they never finish them. And I think the trick to completing a project is just letting go of the details and realizing that this story is time sensitive, especially for documentaries. But it's better to get it out there imperfectly than never to have anyone see it at all. So, you know, The Right to Love, they're definitely like pulling hair out moments where it wasn't going the way I wanted or it wasn't perfect all the time. But at least the cause and the message kept me trucking along. So.
And you told us earlier that this was 3 years.
Yeah,
three years in the making.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you just go out and snap things for a few weeks and then put it all together.
And that's another thing, is a lot of filmmakers, you know, have a lot of energy about a film when they have the idea. But when you start putting in the hours and the sweat and tears, honestly, a lot of tears, it's really hard to keep that momentum and passion going. But if you have a message that inspires you, then that's what will keep you going.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So yesterday was a truly exciting day for you. The Right to Love was screened at Frameline. Talk a bit about that. I mean, I've been going to Frameline, I think, for 20 years that I've lived here in the Bay Area. And one of the most exciting things is meeting the filmmaker and having the filmmaker there exchanging ideas with the audience and taking questions. And tell us what that felt like and what it meant for you as a filmmaker.
Oh, I was so excited to receive the acceptance letter from Frameline when we found out that that The Right to Love would be included in this year's festival. I'm a longtime fan from afar of Frameline, but have never had a film there and haven't really been able to get into the thick of it until this year. So, you know, it's the longest running LGBT film festival in the world, the largest and longest,
largest.
Running.
Mm-hmm. And long as and, that's incredible.
Yeah, 36 years this year. So it's, you know, incredibly prestigious festival. And yeah, it was just thrilling to know that we were accepted. And then to get a Saturday screening slot was another, like, thank you. But yeah, we had our screening yesterday on June 16th and had a great, you know, nearly packed house and, great questions, Q&A, and a lot of tears were shed at the end and a lot of thank yous and a couple, actually there were a couple couples coming up to me after the film saying, I have a story that maybe you want to make a film about. I was like, oh, well, you know, send me an email, let's talk. But yeah, they're, of course, it was such a fun experience. And the festival organizers and volunteers are top notch. Like, they really have it together and just, yeah, I'm very impressed by this festival. And I've probably, not to, you know, brag, but just to show my credibility, I've probably been attended about 20 festivals in the past 2 years. So, you know, I've seen the best of the best and the worst of the worst, too.
Sure.
And Frameline is top notch. So.
And talk to us a little bit more about the whole marketing and networking that takes place behind the scenes. Takes you out of the editing room, gets you into an international film festival. Do you have a distributor? Will you do it independently through Jaybird? Or
We don't have a distributor yet, but we're always welcome to talk. And we are talking, actually, to some, but we haven't solidified it yet. And then we also have the option on the table to self-distribute, because that is becoming more popular now. And you can also self-distribute through Netflix and Video On Demand and those kind of outlets. Sorry, what was the question?
Just talking about the whole marketing process and how important networking is. And
That's an interesting hat to put on, because, you know, as a filmmaker, you're usually silent and listening. And especially for a documentarian, you have to be a good listener to listen to the interviews and process it all. And then in the editing room, you're a troll and you don't get any sunlight and your sleeping hours are very messed up. So starting the festival circuit and marketing the film and social networking and tweeting and Facebooking, and it's, you know, introvert like myself, I really have to put myself out of the eggshell and go out there and, you know, take over. But
that's a process in itself, isn't it?
It is. It's exhausting. I'm sure for, like, studio films, they have someone just tweeting or just Facebooking for their film, but for an independent filmmaker, you have to put on every hat. So
sure.
So talk about what it's like to work with your mother and your sister. You direct and edit, and they co-produce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my sister is the administrative expert. I mean, she's literally the one just typing away emails and screening packages and shipping and going to FedEx and all that. So And then my mom is really just the creative kind of fire under our butts. Like she's an abstract artist is actually her background, and she also does a lot of photography. So on our first film, Daddy, I Do, I brought her on as the cinematographer. Just we bought a video camera and I told her to learn how to use it, and she was our cinematographer.
Wow.
So yeah, we're all just kind of, you know, monkeys doing everything, one man band kind of thing.
Tell us a little bit about the Daddy film.
Oh yeah, Daddy, I Do. So it's about sex education, and the reason I had the idea to make this film was as a kid I grew up doing the purity pledges, and then I heard about this kind of national movement called Purity Balls, which is where young girls as young as 6 years old go to this prom like event with their dad. And the girls vow to remain a virgin until marriage, and then the dad vows to protect his daughter's chastity until marriage. And it's very kind of, you know, it is what it is. So so I found this topic fascinating, and I actually knew a lot about it doing the purity pledges myself and wearing a purity ring as a teenager, and also being a promoter of purity pledging as a teenager. I was one of those, you know, kind of snobby girls who's like, Don't hold hands until you're married. So I started making Daddy, I Do because I was 21 when I started making it. And I just started to realize that the world wasn't as black and white as I was taught. And as my mom was my cinematographer and I was interviewing people, we traveled the country, went to Alabama and Tennessee and all these random places and started interviewing people.
Deep down south. Wow.
Yeah. And that whole film was just kind of my growing out of the bubble experience. And we interviewed girls who had abortions and thought it was the best decision of their life, and other girls who regretted it. And we interviewed one of the most famous strippers in Vegas, and we interviewed a lot of different people. So it's an interesting film. But that will be available later this year on DVD.
Good. One of the things I think is a powerful understory to our whole conversation is your personal transformation and awakening through all of this. Going, especially now knowing and having a sense myself of that whole line of thinking about, you know, purity and chastity and a black and white world that is very absolute. And here you are today on the other side of the microphone, having come so far. And I mean that when I say it's a powerful testimony. Where are you today with your church beliefs and your spirituality? Are you comfortable talking about that a little bit?
Yes, I am, but I can't say anything in absolutes because it's still a transformation for me. I'm still in the thick of it, so it's hard to analyze something when you're in the thick of it. But as of right now, I suppose the best put in a box word for me would be agnostic. But that's not to say I was so heavily involved growing up in the evangelical church, and, you know, a lot of that affects the way I think and feel about things. So you can never completely remove that. And I think if anything that I really hold from that upbringing is just a very strong sense of what's moral in my mind, because I do think morality is subjective. But I still find myself very like, is that the right thing to say, and how will that make them feel? And I'm just very aware of people's feelings and where they come from. And
understood.
Yeah. But as far as you know, I don't read the Bible every day or as much as I used to. You know, back in the day, I did this thing called Missionettes, which was kind of it was basically a Brownies Girl Scouts, but for church-going Christian girls, so the Missionettes. And so we had to memorize whole chapters in the Bible, and I can still recite all those, you know, chapters. So it's a big 180, but the transformation is still happening, and I think documentaries are really my discovery period. But
so at what point did you become a filmmaker? At what point did you study film? Are you self-taught?
Self-taught, actually. And I didn't go to college. So I was interested in the film industry very young, I started doing theater and all that. And so when I was 18, I decided to move to Los Angeles and started acting for a while. And then the writer's strike happened in 2008, and there was this, I mean, everyone was growing beards and depressed and no one was auditioning. Mm. And so there was just no work. And then at that same time, I watched Jesus Camp for the first time, the documentary. And I could totally relate to that film. And then a lot of my friends who also watched it thought it was a frightening film and it was just, you know, scary and all this. And I was thinking, but no, it's not. I went through that. It's not scary. They, you know, they just showed what happened. Mm-hmm. And I realized that you could be a documentarian and just show what's happening without forcing the audience to think a certain way. And they'll come to their own conclusions based on where they come from in life. And then I found out that the filmmakers of Jesus Camp weren't Christian or weren't raised in that world at all. And so I thought, well, I wonder what my perspective in making a documentary would be, because I have been in that world. So I started making Daddy I Do, and I just loved it. And then loved the bonding experience with my family and taught myself to edit and found out I love that too. And yeah.
Just briefly, did your family go through a similar transformation in their spiritual thinking?
Yeah, I was actually the last one to come as out of the bubble. That's what we call it. Mm. We come out of the bubble. But I was the last one. So my mom first came out of the bubble probably about 10 years before I did. And there were times when I was going to church and praying for her and putting her name on the whiteboard so that everyone could pray as a group for my mom to come back to the church and all this. It's very sad when I think back to it now. But and then my sister came out of the church. I mean, like, just kind of slowly started to
separate,
think for herself. And yeah. And so she started to separate a little bit about 5 years after my mom. And then I started to separate about 5 years after that. So I was the more stubborn one, but I eventually started to think for myself, better or worse.
It's a process. It is a process.
Yeah.
So what next? What are you working on now?
Well, now we're tossing around a lot of different documentary ideas, and I also want to start making scripted films, directing scripted films, just because it's a lot easier to plan out shots knowing what the storyline is and the dialogue and all that. But I still love documentaries, so I don't think I'll ever stop making documentaries. But I'm working on some scripts with some screenwriters and just trying it one step at a time.
Where else will the right to love be shown?
Well, our next screening, we have one tonight, or I guess it just ended. It was at 6 o'clock tonight in LA. And then we have one on Friday, the June 22nd in Los Angeles. And I'll actually be at that one. So that's at the Hollywood Fringe Film Festival. And then we have a screening in Rio de Janeiro on June 29th. And August 23rd in the UK. And then we're screening in Los Angeles and New York City in September for a full week in each city. It's one of the qualifications for the 2013 Academy Awards. So we'll be screening for a full week in LA at the Lemley NoHo Theater and a full week in New York City at the Quad Cinema in September.
Nice.
Right before the election.
So you're just not focusing on LGBT film festivals. You're doing the whole spectrum.
Yeah. And, we're also doing a lot of church screenings because I hope that's a good outlet to get people who are on the fence or just don't know anything about this issue or marriage equality or LGBT issues. So start dialogue in the churches and just really open their minds and hearts to the LeFou family and hope to win them over.
So this is a project. You'll be there with the film and you'll chat with other religious folks and bring your experience and ideas and the film.
Yeah. So we have two organizations, the Evangelical Network, based out of San Francisco. So they have a network of a couple dozen churches across the country. So they'll be screening The Right to Love with their churches. And then the Liberty Education Forum out of Washington, D.C. will also be doing a church initiative screening. So, yeah. So trickling away. But.
And you are a young lady. Congratulations again on your success and keep at it. You're really talented.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Just briefly, do you have a website or anything that people can check out?
We do. For The Right to Love, go to www.r2lmovie.com. So R, the number 2, L, movie.com. And for our company and the film Daddy I Do, go to jaybirdproductions.com, jaybirdproductions.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much. You have come a long way, my friend. And you're going to go a long way as well. You have a powerful message, powerful testimony, and you're doing some very, very good work.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for joining us. Tuesday night, also at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco, Frameline will screen Jobriath AD, another documentary. This one is about the first openly gay man to release an album anywhere ever. It's a perfectly crafted film that explores the life of a brilliant musician and flamboyant performer who in 1972 expected to be the next glam rock god, but was undone by hype and homophobia. Have a listen to the man himself. This is Take Me, I'm Yours from Jobriath's debut album. Our next guest is Linda Thunderhorse, who is a member of Mama's Family, the group that's sponsoring the Sonoma County AIDS Emergency Fundraiser that's happening Tuesday, June 26th at the Rainbow Cattle Company in Guerneville. Welcome to Outbeat Collage, Linda.
Hi.
First, tell us a bit about Mama's Family and the incredible work that they do for the LGBT community all over the Bay Area.
Mom's family was started in San Francisco over 18 years ago, and it started out with a drag queen persona named Ernestine, and she made the comment that, well, I guess you should be my mama. And that's how it all started, and all of a sudden there was pins and badges and names coming out from mama to different people for their work in the community. People who were contestants in some of the transgender and leather events, and people who did volunteer work in the community. And now Mama's family is in over 42 states and in four countries, Canada, Italy, France, and I can't remember what the other one is.
And how many members? Is it eight? Has it passed 1,000?
It's passed 1,000.
Wow.
That's incredible. How did it become international? How did it spread so quickly?
I'm not sure how it became international.
Talk about some of the work that Mama does, some of the big events
We do charity fundraising. The family does charity fundraising for one of the groups is Sunburst. The Sunburst, it's for kids with AIDS. And
HIV-AIDS camp.
Yeah. And we do fundraisers all over the community for those. We also support the AIDS Emergency Fund. And we also do fundraisers for the Breast Cancer Emergency Fund. And there's one other one, but I can't remember what it is right now.
How long have you been involved with Mama's Family?
I've supported Mama's Family for 10 years, and I've been a member of Mama's Family for 2 years.
So you were pinned.
Yes, I was pinned. I was pinned 2 Christmases ago. I have a friend who was Mama's River Trash Boy, and he had AIDS, and he got cancer, and I helped take care of him till he passed on. And when he passed on, one of the things that he did every Christmas was he did the toy drive for Mama's Family. And so I took the initiative and I picked up the toy drive because I felt like somebody had to pick it up and continue it on. And that's how I wound up getting pinned in Mama's Family.
So talk about that toy drive. Your work with the toy drive, how long it's been going on. You take care of the Guerneville toy drive.
And I started doing it 2 years ago, and I got my partner involved in it, as he is now Mama Santa. And we do our fundraiser in November because that's when my friend passed away. So I start my fundraiser in November, and we do a give back at the Rainbow. The Rainbow does Give Back Tuesday, where they do 10% of their bar total. When you do an event at their bar, they give you back 10% of the proceeds from the bar. My son is Mama's River Shutterbug. He just got pinned, and I do a lot of delegating things because I work two jobs.
A family within the family.
Yes.
That's great. So we have a fundraiser coming up, and this one is for the Sonoma County AIDS Emergency Fund. What does that involve?
The Sonoma County AIDS Emergency Fund is a group here in Sonoma County. It's an entity within itself which is taken care of by face-to-face. They do work for the community to help people who have AIDS, who have exhausted all other leads or possibilities of getting any help if a person didn't have enough money to pay their rent, per se, and as long as they're not on HUD, they can usually get help through the AIDS Emergency Fund. Also, for people who have vehicles that are broke down and they just need help getting their vehicle done. This is a grant-oriented program, and with grants being cut back all the time, so are their funds. And they get private donations also. So that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to help them so that they can continue to help our community. They can give out, like, I think Megan said it was $300 per person. That's their maximum allotted amount. So I figure if we can get them some more money, maybe they can get some more help to our community.
So the fundraiser is going to be held at the Rainbow Cattle Company.
Right.
And I'm looking at the flyer, and it's being catered by Chef David of Ono's Restaurant, which is very Hawaiian. And I'm looking at things like Kalua pig and chicken and pork adobo and jasmine rice. And
that's the food.
Tell us why we need to come out and have more than just participate.
We're going to have a great time. We have Chef David doing our food. We have other people who will be bringing in desserts. We'll have a raffle and we'll have a fundraiser. I got a lot of donations from our community, and our community is really good at helping out when we really need help. The R3 Hotel has given us a two-night stay and dinner for two to auction off. Koala's Fine Foods gave us some gift certificates. Enchanted Antiques and Collectibles gave us two signed artwork pieces by W.W. Flynn. Pat's Restaurant gave us breakfast for two. Big Bottoms Market gave us two fabulous sandwiches and salads. Sonoma Nesting Company gave us a gift certificate. Boone Eat and Drink gave us lunch for two. Trios gave us a $25 gift certificate. Micasitas Mexican Restaurant gave us dinner for two. Seconds First gave us a Marilyn Monroe print. Larks gave us an umbrella. Corbell gave us, we have a Corbell VIP tour for four, which includes two bottles of champagne, and that'll be on auction. McTee's Bullpen gave us a bottle of coffee liqueur Patron. We have a couple t-shirts from Brewed for Thought and Big River. We got coffee from Big River. Barefoot, we got wine from Barefoot, and we have a wooden sculpture that we're auctioning off, and Lambert's 76 gas station gave us a gift certificate, and Panache is giving us a gift certificate, and Ferrari Carano is going to give us something for auction, and Sharon's is giving us something for auction. So
tremendous list.
Wow, that's a great
that's
list.
Fabulous.
So we've been really working hard on it, and we had some other people who said they're thinking about giving us something. So I told them I would gladly put their names out there.
Those are almost
community.
All Guerneville businesses.
Those are almost all Guerneville businesses.
And that's why we support not just LGBT-owned businesses, mm-hmm. but our communities. Local or
right.
our small businesses, small business owners, because they give back to the community, and it's great that
right.
they responded to you and you were able to thank them and they recognize a good cause.
And when you do this, is it more than just the locals who turn out?
We have lots of locals, of course. We have regular locals that turn out, but depending on what our event is, depends on who shows up.
Well, with a lineup of offerings like that plus good Hawaiian food,
yeah.
I can't see why you won't be closing down the streets and partying late into the night at this point.
I hope so. I really do hope so.
And that people will be
such
generous.
A good cause.
And it's a good excuse to wear that aloha shirt that stays in your closet most yep. of the time. Or the grass skirt, if you wish. Very good.
So tell us what you do when you're not fundraising and doing good work.
Well, I do a lot of good work, but one of my things I do is if I have friends who are in bad health, I'm usually the person who's there at the end of the road. I've worked with a lot of people who had AIDS who cancer is just one of the things that just sort of comes up, and so I take care of them until their end.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. For fun, though, I like to play at the R3 Hotel.
There you go.
That's my place. the ground.
There you go.
It's a really nice place to go and just have a good time. They have the pool, they have music, they have the restaurant, and the restaurant, they just did an overhaul in the restaurant, so it's really nice. Putting together.
So they're all different Give Back Tuesdays.
Yes.
Food for Thought was there, Face to Face was there, which is so nice for the owners of the Rainbow to do. And I think they've been doing it 6-7 years?
I think it's 6 or 7 years
now. Yeah, it's been a pretty long time.
Mm-hmm.
So how long have you lived at the river? How long have you been a member of that community? Wow.
Yeah. 15 years.
And Mama's family is going to be marching in the San Francisco Pride Parade, and you'll be there with them. Is that correct?
I'm going to try to be there with them. I did get to march in the Pride Parade in Guerneville, and we had a really good turnout. It turned out to be a really great turnout this year.
Good. Did you come down and see us at the Guerneville Lodge, the whole Pride celebration?
I didn't make it there because I had to work afterwards. Ah. So I went and did the parade, and then I went and did my job.
What did that mean to you, first time in the parade?
Actually, it's my third or fourth time in the parade.
Oh.
Because I used to work at the R3, and so I've been a part of that community for a long time, so I've always helped with the banner and with the floats that they do and different things that they do. So I've always supported it.
What does it mean to you to give back? What do you get as a reward for giving of your time, your caring, your energy?
I get a feeling of great satisfaction to know that I can do something for somebody else and do it in a respectful way.
Sure.
Being part of Mama's family was a big thing to me. When Mama pinned me, it was just a really big thing. It was a really big honor to me because it showed me that other people in the community see what I'm doing. And I don't usually put my name on Front Street because I'm kind of introverted and I like to do things in the quiet, hush-hush thing. And so this is kind of all new to me, you know, putting myself out there.
Uh-huh. But you're putting it out in ways that have powerful ramifications and do a lot of good. Yeah, absolutely. So give us the details, all the details, the date, the time.
Okay. It's June 26th, and it's at the Rainbow Cattle Company, and their address is 16220 Main Street in Guerneville, and their telephone number is 869-0206, and I can be reached at 318-2849 if you'd like to do a donation or if you have any questions. Like we said before, it's going to be calau pig, chicken, and pork adobo, and aromatic jasmine rice with a variety of desserts. There'll be an auction, and there'll be a raffle. And you must be 21 to attend. Sorry.
We'll be serving cocktails.
Because there will be serving cocktails. Come join us. Have drinks. Have fun. Meet some old friends you haven't seen in a while.
And be generous.
Definitely.
Right.
Be generous.
Right.
Definitely.
Right. Linda, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you for the good work you do. And we'll see you Tuesday the 26th.
All right.
That's from 6 to 9 p.m.
It is from 6 to 9 p.m. And if you have any questions about the AIDS Emergency Fund, you can email Megan Murphy, and it's MMURPHY at f2f.org. So if you have any questions, you can get to her.
Great.
Okay, excellent. Great information, great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we want to, again, just say thank you to Linda Thunderhorse and the good work that she's doing with the AIDS Emergency Project, to Cassie J for her powerful story and work, to all of you for joining us here on Father's Day. Greg will be back next Sunday with Jeff Basham with Outbeat Now. And let's actually get a preview. Greg, what do you have in store for next week?
Well, next week on Outbeat Now, Jeff and I have got a really special hour planned, all focused on the history of Pride and the LGBT civil rights movement. We're looking at some of the modern day events, but we're really excited about featuring a segment from the new Christopher Hines documentary, Legalize Gay. It premiered on Logo back in May. So be sure and tune in when you get home from the Pride Parade and the festival in San Francisco, because it's going to be a pretty special show.
8 p.m. Sunday evening.
Outbeat Radio every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. And Mikhail and Sunbell will host Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts Sunday, July 15th. And their guests will be local authors Kenna Lee and Carol McConkie, who will talk about their new books. We want to thank you for listening to Outbeat Radio tonight and to KRCB Public Radio. Please tune in every Sunday night at 8 p.m. for more Outbeat Radio. You can also listen to past shows on www.outbeatradio.com. From all of us here at Outbeat Radio and KRCB, we wish you happy Pride. And we'll leave you tonight with another track from Joe Bryant's debut album. This is I'm Track 7, I'm a Man.
Thanks for joining us, everyone.
Support for Outbeat Radio tonight on KRCB comes from members and from the Napa Valley Opera House, welcoming world-class artists, entertainers to the stage. Located in the heart of downtown Napa, this historic venue hosts Cabaret, presented by the Napa Valley Broadway Playhouse on June 22nd through July 1st, the documentary film Hot Coffee on Tuesday, July 10th, and Michael Feinstein on Friday, July 13th at 8 p.m. The Napa Valley Opera House. For a complete schedule, go to their website at nvoh.org or give them a call at 707-226-7372. You're listening to KRCB-FM Santa Rosa. It's just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. New Dimensions is next.